Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Chane Indira Vishesha Shunyavani Paschati Deshita.
Hare Krishna. So the subject is the power of sadhana. Sadhana literally means a way to do things, that by which something is done. A related term is sadhya, that which is worth doing, or that which is meant to be done. So that gives the idea of the means and the goal. And often connected with the word sadhana is also siddhi, the desired result, or the perfection of sadhana. Sadhana, siddhi, the means and the perfection of that means, that could be applied to anything, any endeavor, but it's usually applied, it's particularly applied in the spiritual field, using the word spiritual in the broadest sense of the term. So sadhana can mean anything beyond the normal. Just even there is tantric sadhana and siddhi, in which activities like having sex with dead bodies is meant to, in the tantric system, give one perfection, that one becomes completely detached from this world, in the sense that one feels no repugnance while doing so, and that the ghost of the who used to be in the body is now outside the body, may attack you and you feel completely fearless, and therefore the ghost can't do anything, and then you attain siddhi, or perfection, in tantra. But I'm just giving that as an example of something that we don't do. Most people don't do. It's very, very difficult to do. It's an example of one kind of siddhi, or perfection. Before embarking on sadhana, or a spiritual quest, we should understand, or it would be better to understand, what is the siddhi that is desired. In the words of Stephen Covey, start with the end in mind. Is that right? Famous sayings. Not really anything new. He picked them up here and there. There's nothing new. Begin with the end in mind. There's nothing really new anywhere. It's all existing. Before we set off on a sadhana, it would be good to understand what the siddhi is, what the ultimate perfection is. But as we're dealing with metaphysical matters, we can't really understand it only philosophically. The experience has to be there also. So there has to be some measure of faith in that also. So, is that sound? Is that? Which one? Oh, too close. Okay. Yeah. So there has to be some measure of faith there also. Faith is there in all endeavors. Just like when in the early days of Google and Apple, there was faith that something could be done, something that had not been done before. So some faith was there. It was ultimately justified. It might not have happened. At the time, you couldn't tell. But with the spiritual endeavor, you can understand, you can have more faith because it has been done. I just said there's nothing new, and then I said Google and Apple, their success had not been done before. Well, it's not been done before within our experience, but this kind of thing, technological development, it's new if we consider the history of the world to be what it is according to the orthodox paradigm, what we're taught at school and all that kind of thing. But from the Vedic paradigm, or from that of all ancient civilizations, which used to be called prehistoric, time goes in cycles. So the technological age, there have been many technological ages. This is not the first one. For attainment of perfection, there have been many, many persons in the past who have achieved perfection in Krishna consciousness. Bahavo jnana tapasa putam madbhavam agataha vitaraga bhaya krodha manmayamam upashritaha bahavo jnana tapasa putam madbhavam agataha. Being freed, the translation of this is that being freed from attachment, fear and anger, vitaraga bhaya krodha manmay, and becoming absorbed in me, Krishna says, many persons in the past became purified and attained me. So here we see the sadhana means to become free from all bad qualities, three of principal ones of which are mentioned here: attachment, material attachment, fear and anger. So to become free from those bad things and to become absorbed in Krishna, to take shelter of Krishna. And many persons, Krishna says, have attained perfection. So with that faith, we can take up sadhana for attaining the perfection, which is described in the Vedas and in modern parlance, or old mixed with modern parlance, is called Krishna consciousness. So the power of sadhana, this you said that we should speak about the power of sadhana. This term power is liked by people who want to attain power, to become more powerful than others, to dominate others, to, which suggests to exploit others, to have a superior position to others. But in the purificatory process of sadhana, we understand that to attain the whole idea of trying to become powerful is our problem. That we are intrinsically non-powerful beings. Now we may attain some power, just like when we were coming at the stoplight. I saw some man about, what, 35 years old. Did you see him? His muscles were brimming all over. So he was, looked like he was a fan of going to the gym. So he had some physical power. But so what? All these athletes, they're working out trying to become very strong. You just bring one baby elephant and he's stronger than the strongest man in the world. So if you want to have a powerful body, it's not necessarily a bad thing, but you're likely to get born as an elephant in the next life. And because desire leads to result, so if we desire a strong body, we can be born as an elephant. Knowledge is said to be power. That's there in Shastra also. That what is that? Buddhir yatsya balam tasya. Who has got intelligence has got strength. So the idea to get that I shall be the power of sadhana, the idea that I will get power. I spoke briefly about tantric sadhana, Why do people do such things as copulating with a dead body? It's not many people who do that, but there are some. Some do it with the aim of, the purported aim to become free from all material attachment, but most do it to get power, supernatural power, by which they can control ghosts and spirits and in this way get power, black magic, the power of black magic. And there are people in different ways who try to get power, politicians. Now just the results of the Indian general election has come. So there's a new prime minister in India, and there are probably over a billion people in India who could be more powerful than the previous prime minister in their whole temperament and outlook. But anyway, he's got power, some kind of power, political power. Someone who is in charge of an army has military power. So all these kinds of power. But the real power of sadhana begins with the knowledge that the idea of becoming powerful is our enemy. We think that we will get power and we will overcome our enemies, either in the office, in our career, we have enemies or rivals, is maybe a more polite term. Rivals can turn into enemies. There may be not much borderline between them. So we want to get ahead, have power. But the whole idea that I shall become powerful is the enemy of our real self-interest. Because sadhana, the highest sadhana, leads to the siddhi, the highest perfection of understanding who we are and being situated in that position. That is called yoga. Yoga means to link with the Supreme, although nowadays yoga is thought to be a system of exercises. Yoga means, it literally means to link. So it doesn't necessarily mean to link with the Supreme, but in the classical use of the term, it means to link with the Supreme. And the beginning of linking with the Supreme, first of all, we have to understand who we are. That means we're not the Supreme. If we're going to link with the Supreme, that immediately means that we're not Supreme. And to understand that is the entrance into perfection, which means the entrance into sadhana. Not only that we're not Supreme, but that we cannot become Supreme. The whole idea of becoming Supreme is stupid, or in America, as they say, stupid. Either British pronunciation or American pronunciation, either way, it's stupid. As we're in America, I'll say stupid. The idea of becoming the Supreme is inherently foolish, because if we're not Supreme, that means we're not Supreme. The already Supreme is there. Supreme, in the fullest sense, means always Supreme. Now there's a new, or about to be a new, Prime Minister of India. He wasn't Prime Minister. He's still not Prime Minister. Hasn't been sworn in yet. He might not make it. You never know. Anything can happen. But after a few years, let's see. We would think he may have a term of 5 years. He may not make it through it. May have 2 terms in a row. But the time will come when the Honewala, to be Prime Minister of India, will be replaced by someone else. Or the whole system could change. They might make a presidential system. Or anything could happen. All kinds of things could happen. But one thing's for sure, whatever position of apparent supremacy anyone may have, it is temporary. There's a great example of this in this area around here, in the case of Mr. Steve Jobs, who was the supreme at Apple, and time caught up with him. So the idea that I shall become supreme is incredibly foolish. Nevertheless, pretty much everyone pursues it to some extent or other. Not everyone tries to be a big political leader or a big company boss, but everyone has this egoism of thinking, I'll be on top of others, maybe within my own little sphere. And I suppose in what are supposed to be very progressive companies like Apple and Google, they do their best to keep the monsters out of the office, the little boss in the office who terrorizes everyone, but I don't know if they're fully successful. Are they? You can tell me. Are you one of them, Damodara? You're a terror in your office. You terrorize with your dictatorial regime. It must happen. You just can't, whatever you do, you just can't legislate human nature away. So the idea of becoming supreme and be powerful and dominate others. It's one reason people like to have dogs. I know I'm going against the all touching sacred territory here in America. But one reason people like to have dogs is because the dog accepts you as supreme. And so you have a feeling of being supreme over the dog. You can't be supreme over anyone, but the dog looks up to you like God in every respect. You are the master, and the dog looks up to you as the great benefactor. And in this way, people like to have dogs. So the real power of sadhana begins with understanding that I am not powerful, but there is the supreme power. And my best interest is in accepting that I'm not powerful, and that I would be better taking the position of a dog rather than taking the position of a master. Taking the position of a dog in as much as we are dependent, to recognize our dependence, and also to recognize that the Supreme is benevolent. Krishna, all attractive. I can say to you, if I was saying to others, maybe they wouldn't accept, but generally, Indians by their culture are at least somewhat open to that. Indian Hindus, there's at least somewhat open to that, if not very open to it. But anyway, you can say in another language also, this Supreme is a person. It's another foolish idea that the Supreme is not a person, because if I'm not the Supreme, then if the Supreme is not a person, then I've got something the Supreme doesn't have. So how can the Supreme, it doesn't make any sense. So the Supreme is a person, but he's not a miserable person like us who's trying to lord it over a dog or an office. He automatically, by his powers, he's automatically in control of it. He's so much in control of everything that being in control of everything doesn't mean much to him. He's just interested in being friends with everyone. So sadhana is the means to understand all these things, and sadhana is the means to discover actually who we are. We're so covered by misconceptions that we don't really know who we are. The first misconception is to think of this life as being all in all. Whereas we are eternal beings. Before we were in the present body that we're in, we existed. This body will die as sure as death. This body will die, but we will continue to exist. So in eternity, this life is just a flash but we take it so seriously, as if it's my career, my home, my dog. These are all what's really important. So they are of importance, but only temporarily. What's permanently important is what is my eternal identity. Otherwise, in one life, we have one identity, in another life, another identity, another life, another identity. So sadhana means to understand my eternal position in relationship with the Supreme. That is the means for reviving that consciousness. We don't have that consciousness now because we are trying to be powerful independently of the Supreme Powerful. So that is it's a foolish way of thinking. But due to that, due to clinging to the idea that I can be powerful, I can be happy on the basis of my present identity, we suffer in this world. So sadhana is the process of purification, purifying our consciousness from misconceptions, misunderstandings. The first point in sadhana is to hear about all these things, which you and I are doing. Now, I'm also doing, because I'm also hearing what I'm saying. So hearing is the beginning of sadhana. Very easy. I mean, it's definitely a lot easier than copulating with dead bodies, for instance. And there are many other extreme processes of sadhana which may be undertaken to try to snap or to break through that thick wall of misconceptions, such as we've heard of, or some of you may have seen, yogis in India who sit on thorns. Any of you have seen? I've seen. Kumbh Mela, you're from Allahabad, you see. They all come out and sit in public and shut and just sit there on a bed of thorns. So, such extreme practices, or some are described also of submerging oneself up to the neck in freezing cold water, which yogis can do that without dying. Otherwise, you can have sub-zero temperature water. If it's flowing fast, then it doesn't freeze. Or in the summer, hot summer, in India. Now it's the hot summer is beginning. Yeah, it's fully in. Sitting outside in the sun and building fires all around you. So extreme heat. And trying to meditate in that situation. So these are extreme sadhanas, which are supposed to jerk you from a present consciousness to an altered state of consciousness. But the sattvic, or pure, we can say, purest form of sadhana, does not involve any such extreme activities. Hearing is the beginning. Hearing with humility, understanding that I need to learn. I require to learn. So hearing submissively, and then the next is chanting the mantra, especially the Hare Krishna mantra. This in itself is purifying, purifies the consciousness. Krishna is supreme. His name is non-different from him. He is all pure, all transcendental. So by chanting his name, that purifies the consciousness. It's a very powerful process, chanting the name of Krishna. So these are two of the two prime processes of sadhana, which are very powerful for purifying the consciousness. Powerful in purifying the consciousness means they very quickly purify the heart from the misconception that I am powerful or that I should be powerful. But purification of the heart means to realize, to absorb the consciousness that I am constitutionally very tiny, I am constitutionally not powerful, I am constitutionally a servant of the Supreme, and that is my natural loving relationship with Krishna. And by Krishna's grace, one who enters into that loving relationship based on the understanding that I am dependent, not independent, such a person becomes imbued with Krishna's power to do the greatest good to the world, which is imparting this Krishna consciousness to others. So if we chant Hare Krishna and hear about Krishna, we become purified, our life becomes successful. Life becomes successful means no more birth and death. We go to Krishna. That, in brief, is a talk about the power of sadhana. If anyone has any questions, you may please ask just now. No questions means either, well, there are possibilities. Either you're completely convinced, or you think it's so stupid it's not even worth asking about, or that anyway you want to rush back to the office. Which is it? Or you didn't understand anything and you think it's over your head and you don't want to show your ignorance. That's another possibility. Yeah. Yeah, actually, you don't have to say that. It's become a routine at the end of a speech. Thank you for the very nice class. Okay, if you come to any of my classes, you don't have to say that. Thank you for the wonderful class. It's a nice thing to say, but when it becomes a routine, then there's no meaning to it. Yeah.
The question I have for you is, like, in our current circumstances, since the sadhana sometimes takes back seat.
In your current circumstances, sadhana takes a back seat, because in the corporate culture, the corporation takes the front seat and the back seat and the middle seats. You're supposed to just be completely, if you could be as absorbed in Krishna as your job, then your life would be very good. I don't know what it's more intense in India, I think, than here. Because longer hours. And there was one devotee, he left his job and is now full-time brahmachari. He's overseeing the Bhagavad Darshan magazine in Tamil. Any Tamils here? Yeah. Actually, you should subscribe to that magazine. Do you read Tamil? No. The Tamils who read Tamil don't end up in Silicon Valley. So he was doing a job, something, I don't remember, it was some research for some company. And his boss told him that there's no need for you to go home. See, when you want to sleep, you can sleep here. We'll bring you food. So you eat, sleep, and work. And what need is there to do anything else? I guess they must have had a shower there also. And when you're on a project or something, then that's it. No need to go home. Your life is your work. Well,
it's presented a little bit different here.
It's presented differently. They're more smart in making you their slaves. Well, you have to put the priorities in your life. What at the end of your life, what do you want? What do you want? Do you want to go to Krishna or you want to end up as a mouse? You're always using mouse, so you might end up as a mouse. You have to think, what are you doing with your... Oh, but then you may say, well, how can you, after all my childhood working and getting the IIT, you're a product of IIT? No! What about BITS? No! What are you doing here? How did you get in? You faked your certificate, so what? Huh? Somehow or other you made it here without being from either IIT or BITS. Well, that's unusual. Give him a big round of applause. Anyway, you worked hard and you've achieved your goal of working for either Google or Apple. Cisco? I must admit my ignorance. What does that mean? CISO. I've seen it, but what does it mean?
That's a networking company.
Networking company. Well, okay. I'm still...
Internet routers.
Internet routers, okay.
It's the same.
Sorry for my ignorance. It's all part of the same kind of thing that goes on around here. Yeah, it's a different form of working. Your life is successful. You made it to all the way from... Where are you from?
Hyderabad,
Tamil. Well, that's another. You don't know Telugu either. I mean, you can't read it.
I can.
You can read Telugu. Okay, congratulations. So, how could we? What are you even doing here? He's holding higher consciousness. Yeah, but I'm just. Right, very good point. I'm speaking sarcastically. That, and you can see also there are many fewer people here than are not here. It won't be many that come. Recently I heard a lecture of Srila Prabhupada in which he said that, this was 1968 or 9 in Los Angeles, and he said, Why are there only 15 or 20 people here in this huge city of Los Angeles? He said, because the rest are envious of Krishna. They're not interested in Krishna. So, yeah, you have to think what you're going to do. At the time of death, all that you've done for Cisco will not help you in any way whatsoever. It's not the worst possible karma that you could get, but it's definitely not good karma. It's not even on the material platform, it's not punya karma. And spiritually, nothing. So you have to plan your life in such a way that you can remember Krishna. What that involves, you have to see. But that famous verse is there, Ladva Sudola Bamidang Bahu Sambhavante Manu Shamartha Damanityamapi Hadhira Turnam Yateta Napatedanumritya Yava Nishrayasaya Vishaya Kalu Sarvata Syat. Spoken by Krishna, not in Bhagavad Gita, this is in Uddhava Gita, in Bhagavata. He says that we have now attained the human form of life, which is very rare to attain. So it's good fortune that we have it now. It won't last very long, but it is very valuable, because only in the human life do we have the opportunity to get free from the cycle of birth and death. Therefore, having attained this life, we should utilize it and do whatever is required so that we don't get born again. And if you think, well, there are so many other things to do, well, there are so many other things to do in all these species of life, but it's only the human form of life that affords the opportunity for self-realization. So, we should consider this very seriously, that human life is meant for God-realization, and if we don't do that, then we've missed the greatest opportunity. The human form of life in itself is a far greater opportunity. The opportunity for self-realization is a far greater opportunity than any other opportunity. Now Narendra Modi, Namo, is very pleased that he got the opportunity to become the Prime Minister of India. But all of you who are with few exceptions, citizens of India, I presume, you are in a much, much, much better situation than he. Because you've begun to understand the real purpose of human life. So, I'm not saying leave your job. Maybe it could come to that. But you should do whatever is required so that you can become self-realized. And even if it means that your career is not on the front burner, you have to do what is required, that you don't get born again and become Krishna conscious. It's possible to combine corporate life with Krishna conscious life. Not from the Krishna conscious point of view, not very satisfactorily, but it can be done. That's just I'm not giving any specific direction, I'm just speaking on principle. How you apply that in your life, well, you'll have to see. In considering all the other people in your life, there's so many factors involved. Anything else? Yeah, those who are going away, take some prasad and go, please. Oh, you're preparing the prasad to give others. Okay, I thought you were leaving. Yeah, work is worship, said in some religions. They say that? Work is worship. Well, they got that from Swami Vivekananda. It's in every age. Some people say that serve mankind. So, what's the question? How is that reconciled with the corporate way of life? Well, first of all, we should see what is the validity of the statement before we want to reconcile it. Just like the statement, all dogs are cats. Do you want to reconcile that with corporate life? No. It doesn't make any sense. Does it? Although you never know, with genetic engineering, maybe it will be. As of now, all dogs are cats, doesn't make any sense. So, work is worship, service to mankind. Again, we have to understand what is ultimately reality. Service to mankind in terms of making frisbees for people to run around after. If you just turn around, you can see there's a... Oh, on all directions. There's frisbee playing going on. So you might think to create a better frisbee is a great service for mankind. Or feeding the poor. Well, Jesus is reputed to have said, the poor will always be with us. So, service to humanity. That's a sectarian statement to say that. Service to humanity. That leaves out the vast majority of living beings in this world who are not in human forms. So that's already a sectarian statement. Worship, we should understand what that means. Worship means to offer homage to that or who is superior to us. Worship means a spiritual activity. So we have to know the science of spirit. What is spirit? So feeding the poor, that's a social duty, you could say. But it's not on level with worshipping the Supreme Person, God. So... it's a misnomer. So there's no need to reconcile it with corporate life. reconciling with corporate life, that to the idea of wanting to reconcile something with corporate life gives the idea that anything is worth reconciling with corporate life. But corporate life in itself is not conducive to the human condition, either materially or spiritually. Materially, it's arguable. Spiritually, it's not in and of itself of any particular benefit. And materially, it's definitely arguable whether it is of benefit to. Is the life in the modern world, which is largely shaped by massive corporations, is it actually beneficial for human society? It's quite questionable. So why we should want to reconcile anything with corporate life in the first place, that also should be considered. Because most people are already in it, that doesn't mean that it's good, or that we should be looking to promote it and therefore reconcile other things with it. In fact, Srila Prabhupada, analyzing from the vantage point of Shastra and himself being a fully self-realized soul, pointed out that this modern society is demoniac. And he's promoted the alternative that we go back to a traditional way of life based on simple living, high thinking, and worship of Krishna. Now, that may not be possible for everyone immediately. And so we may want to we may find ourselves in a position where we feel bound to make some adjustments with corporate life. But if we are to be Krishna conscious, we should understand everything through Shastra, through Krishna's teachings. And we should understand that this corporate life in itself is, it's antithetical to the actual interest of human society and to individuals within it. Doesn't it depend on what the corporation does? Well, all the corporations don't act independently. So all the corporations are part of a whole way of life that promotes industrialization, which means doing harm to the earth, making a whole social system which is money-based, paper money-based, which paper money means there's automatically cheating and exploitation. It means the whole educational system is set up in such a way that people are groomed from the beginning to be corporate entities. So the very concept of massive corporations that are that shape the whole of human society, with no one answerable, actually. Corporations have massive power, but there are no individuals answerable. Corporations get sued, not the people who make the policies. They're not held criminally responsible. So, what does the corporation do? They're all part of a massive corporate world. They're not independent. They all shape the world in which we live. Well, the whole thing's rotten. The whole thing is rotten. There has to be teamwork for something to be produced.
By yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
You need to interact with others. So in corporations, you can emulate that. And then if you have that kind of a corporation, it can be a good thing.
You're conflating different concepts here. The concept that human beings work cooperatively, that is there certainly in all societies. That corporations also do doesn't nullify the argument that corporations, on the they wield massive power in shaping the whole of modern human society in a manner which is ultimately not beneficial for human society. So yes, we're not saying that corporations are not beneficial, it's not an argument for anarchy, which you seem to be suggesting. That there should be a different, there should be a different goal. A human society should be organized with it, not the goal of simply producing more and more kinds of technologies and consumer products, which, by the way, the whole corporate society by which America is rich depends on exploitation of many people in the world. For instance, the clothes that you are wearing were probably made in China in some sweatshop, and America's rich while others are exploited.
The fact that some corporations don't act in the Krishna consciousness doesn't mean that corporations is bad.
That's true, that they don't, well, that's arguable also. But it would have to be a completely different concept of corporation than the one in which we are, in the term that I'm using, in the way that I'm using the word, and in the way that it's generally understood.
Yeah, but there is also room for mistakes, right? So human beings try to do, maybe try to align with Krishna consciousness
and are 100% successful. So maybe they are 80% successful. So, you know, so there is that too. So maybe you have a corporation, not... Do you work for a corporate? Do you work for one of these corporations here?
No.
Uh-huh.
But I did.
I see. That's true, that's true. But there's a lot, the kind of information that you can find on Google search is information produced about the whole big world, which is so complex, which we you can find it, yeah, but that's true, but to produce a whole massive corporate world, and then within that you can utilize that to find Krishna consciousness. It's not required for Krishna consciousness. The world... No, no, no. Corporations are not required. Human society lived for thousands and millions of years without corporations. And people in general did not have the levels of stress that they have at the present time. They don't have the levels of poison in their body and in their mind. So on the whole, I give... it's up to you, of course. You could say it's subjective. But the modern way of life is a big down, minus. And definitely in terms of spiritual understanding, the whole human race is going galloping backwards. Anyway, Hare Krishna. Let's distribute prasad. Doing well in both. Both in sadhana and the corporate. It's difficult to do well in both, because to do well in corporate life, you have to give yourself heart and soul to it. And to do well in sadhana, you have to give yourself heart and soul to it. So, doing well, the whole idea of doing well in corporate life is defined from within the idea of corporate life, but it means to have a successful career. So the definition of doing well in corporate life, although the terms are the same, and the definition of doing well in sadhana, they're quite different aims. So it is possible to be materially adept and spiritually adept, but it's a tough balancing act. there were many examples in the past. As for instance, we find in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna gives the example of Janak. But in the society that Janak lived, and especially he was the king, so he was able to, or his duty was to maintain it, there was the consciousness that material progress is not all in all, that spiritual, that material life should be organized, but that spiritual life is more important. So time, there was actually time allotted for spiritual practices. There was the time for a king, his time was allotted. This time of day, you do this, you do this, you do this. So time was allotted for spiritual practices. So it was a very different society. In that kind of society, it is possible to pursue material goals and spiritual goals. Very difficult in the modern society. Which is again why Srila Prabhupada wanted to establish Varnashram. Varnashram means an arrangement for human society in which people can fulfill their material needs, and if they have a desire to live comfortably, they can live comfortably also, but without excessive work. So you become just totally absorbed in work, and keeping our needs to the basics, that we don't need, for instance, Google search. I also use Google search because I'm living and operating in this world, but I'm also promoting communities in which people can live, in which, by the grace of God, all their material needs are taken care of and their concentration is on Krishna, because there's no end. Otherwise, there's no end. The research will go on and on and on. There'll be more technology, this, that, and the other, always more, 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 more. And there's no end. But there's no ultimate benefit in it either. Where do such communities? Well, they should be existing all over the world if we'd done what Srila Prabhupada said to do. There are some attempts being made to establish such Krishna conscious communities. Some other in India, for instance. How can they be protected? That's a very big question. I'm not going to get into it now. You can find out on my website. Do we have that CD of my lectures on Varnashram?
Yeah, yeah.
What is the word again? Varnashram.
Varna means division of Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. Ashram means division of Brahmacharya, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyasi. So these are the divisions. Varna doesn't mean by birth. In Bhagavad Gita, the four divisions are said to be according to guna and karma, not according to janma. Yeah, here it is. There's a photo taken with a machine, obviously a camera, from a Varnashram project in Tamil Nadu with myself standing outside the hut that I lived in for 40 days, made of bamboo, grass, and earth. What is the continuation of moksha?
Yeah, so one is attaining moksha.
What do you do? Okay, all right. Yeah, the answer is given in Srimad Bhagavatam in brief. Muktir hit vanyata rupam swarupena vyavastitihi. Mukti, synonym for moksha, means to give up the external, extrinsic forms like this body, and attain one's own form, one's own original form. That means the spiritual form in the spiritual world with Krishna, where there are many activities in the service of Krishna. Soul continues to exist with the spiritual form in the spiritual world with full bliss in the service of Krishna. That's the best kind of moksha. There is another one, which is usually people think of as just becoming light, but it's not very attractive, is it? Just merging into some light. Okay, Hare Krishna. We'll finish there.